Everyone, welcome to the Survival Show podcast. I'm David, your host for today's show, where it's our job to take you step by step through the mindset, skills, tactics, and gear you need to survive almost any situation, including jungles in Portland, Oregon, with my co-hosts, guest co-hosts today, Bryce from Condor Knife and Tool. I got it messed up. Okay, you guys introduce your own selves.
Well, if you, there's a C, a K, and a T if you acronym everything in both of them, so it gets like super crazy anyway.
Bryce, tell us, who are you and why are you here?
I'm Bryce. I'm from CRKT, or Columbia River Knife and Tool. I'm a sales manager there and just kind of a general knife geek. I collected knives for since I was a kid.
Oh, you collected.
Really got into it, though, around 2012, nice. You know, when the YouTube scene came on.
Yeah, yeah.
You started listening to Nuttin' Fancy talk for 15 minutes about one knife, and you're like, whoa, there's way more to this than I ever thought.
Yeah.
And so that really, like, sparked it into the higher-end stuff. But
And I found out just here, Bright, besides being a generally responsible human being and a great guy and great at his job, he's an ultralight backpacker. He likes whitewater rafting and junk like that. So maybe we'll talk about it a little bit.
Yeah.
And you, who are you? I know you're loved by millions, but who are you?
Scorned. Joe Flowers. I am one of the designers at Condor Tool and Knife. Also designed for Topps Knives, Artisan, CJRB, and a couple other knife companies too, and I'm also just a knife nut like Bryce, who got lucky and gets to work with knives as a profession.
So yeah, yeah,
really cool.
Yeah, kind of me too.
And
I
also do Bushcraft Global in the jungle too, which you've been on.
I love it. Little backstory, Bryce, just go ahead and fire away. Like, tell us, you can start at, like, kindergarten. When was the first time you cut yourself with a knife? All that sort of stuff.
I actually do have a good story for the first time I cut myself. It was my first backpacking trip. My dad was going to take me out there. My mom's always super squeamish about anything edged or weapons. And she kind of gave up on that after I started chewing my peanut butter sandwiches into guns. So she kind of gave up after that. I remember the first time he gave me, like, a little Victorinox SD. He's like, all right, this is what you're going to do. And, you know, you see your dad do that thing where he kind of checks the sharpness with his thumb.
Yeah.
So my first thing was just go zoom and just unzip my finger, which really, really got my mom happy there. But that was kind of my first experience. And then it was just kind of a collection of, you know, like random knives, you know, just like little things here and there.
Yeah.
That kind of you just cherish, though. Just like this one knife that's like, oh, so cool.
What's your favorite one? I mean, you don't have to pick your babies, but let's say can be CRKT or any knife company. What's one of your like most sentimental knives? What's your most sentimental knife?
My first like real good knife was the 940 from Benchmates. That's how I kind of got that first time. Nothing fancy again. That's kind of what I was watching at the time, and I still love that knife. It's near and dear to my heart.
Is that Osborne?
Yeah,
that
design, Osborne design.
Yeah, it's a legendary design.
One of the best designs ever.
Yeah,
you know? and specifically with CRKT, you know, I carry a M1613T, which is it's an outdated model at this time, but with the titanium frame.
Yeah.
I really like it. And that's what I lusted after for CRKT. It's the big M1614 DSFG.
Yeah.
Theft serrations. It's got cross guard. All that stuff was super cool before I came on to CRKT. But man, is it fun to get on there and meet all the designers?
Yeah, yeah. You guys have a ton of designers over at CRKT.
Yeah, so tell everybody, all of our listeners, like, CRKT's model, I think, is absolutely not only from a marketing perspective, but from a giving back perspective, because you have veterans. You know, you've really enabled veterans to pick up the craft and be able to do sustainable, sustain themselves through crafts, and you know, it's therapeutic too. But tell us a little bit about CRKT, their mission, and how they approach business and knife making.
Yeah, so we have a long list of designers that work with us, and we take their customs and turn them into production models. So we take a canned onion knife that, if you can even get access to it, retails for thousands and thousands of dollars. But you can get it for a decent price, and that's what's really amazing. You have that kind of heart and soul behind all our products. It's not just designed in CAD or something like that. They've really worked on these. These people hammer steel. They have so much knowledge. That's another thing that's really humbling, coming here and getting to talk to some of these guys and gals, because you think you know knives, but you start talking to Ken Onion.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
And you're just lost, and it's awesome. It's such an amazing learning experience. And if you would have told me back when I was like slinging like blurs at Sport Chalet that I was going to get a hangout with Ken Onion, I'd be like, "Yeah, you're blowing smoke, man. There's no way."
Yeah, I would say the same thing. Like, I never thought I'd be able to like to hang out with some of these legends that like I've been looking at in Tactical Knives magazine since a kid and stuff like that too. So it's like very, you know, knife centric for us being knife people. But David, you're a knife guy too. You've got a MSK out and a lot of various manufacturers there. So, you know, we're still here because we like cutting stuff with knives.
Right. Everybody loves knives, really.
Yeah.
I mean, from kitchen knives. Kitchen knives are big.
Yeah, they're huge now this year,
too. We
should
design a kitchen knife, yeah.
There's a lot of business with kitchen knives right now because, you know, in some of the other countries, they're able to do a lot more steel variations and do more fancy stuff that was pretty cost prohibitive back in the day.
Yeah.
I don't know what that stuff is. It's just like metal that looks metal-y to me. But.
So Bryce, how did you end up at CRKT?
I was selling power tools before this, and I really wanted to get back into the outdoor world, kind of use those things that you're
power
interested
in. Power tools? What kind of power tools?
I was selling Milwaukee power tools.
Okay. Oh, cool.
Yeah, so nice. I was a rep for them for a number of years. And then, but I really wanted to get back in the outdoor industry. Before that, I was a manager at Sports Chalet. It's now defunct, but it was on the West Coast. It was like a sporting goods store. Really cool. Met a lot of my cool friends there. But really, I wanted to get back into something that I had like a little bit closer to like what I like to do. Mm-hmm. And so it was a really good opportunity. I got to come on and design the trade shows and do a lot of that work. But kind of worked our way up, and it was really fun. Really fun to get into CRKT and use something that's like something I've been kind of working on my whole life. You know, you have a skill you're building on and building those stories and all that. So,
and I mean, you've seen backpackers a lot. You know, will carry CRKTs a ton of times, and you know, you'll see it in their pocket as their only knife. So now you're part of that company.
I know.
It's kind of crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot
that
of
is
fun.
Really cool.
A lot of fun.
Joe, how about you? How about some backstory? Take your time. We got time.
I was into reptiles and knives way too much when I was a kid. Watched Crocodile Dundee way too much. And
now you are.
Yeah, and now, you know, now, well, no, not really, because he's much funnier. But, like, as a kid, you know, I went to the one of the NRA shows, and I'd been reading Tactical Knives, and I was, like, 14 years old, like, at this time, or 12 or 14 or something like that. And I met the editor, Stephen Dick, of Tactical Knives magazine, and was talking to him, and was just, like, blown away. That was, like, my first celebrity I met to me. And later on, you know, Terrell Hoffman of Practice What You Preach, he's a knife writer and a gun writer, introduced me to Stephen, and I was like, yeah, I met you when I was a little kid, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, well, you know, you're in college. Can you write whole sentences? I'm like, sometimes. And so I started writing for Tactical Knives magazine, and then the writing stuff kind of picked up. I actually wrote for Backpacker magazine for a while, too, and a bunch of different print magazines, and then had always been a machete nut my entire life. Terrell introduced me to Imakasa, who I already knew, and I was rattling off their model numbers of their Imakasa machetes. They're like, how does an American know this too much? I'm like, because I'm crazy about machetes. And then so they started designing with them and Tops right around the same time. And it's been going that way ever since. And then Tops helped me start Bushcraft Global because I like knives. And I like reptiles, and where do you find that? A lot in the jungle. And so in South America, Central America, you get around there, and you can play with knives and play with animals and, have a really good time.
Nice. So have you ever had a day job? Like,
Yeah, all the time.
Okay.
No,
have you ever worked for anybody else?
Yeah. I worked for the Department of Entomology for NC State University.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
As I was a field technician, beekeeper.
Yep.
So I do a lot of genetic work with bees and stuff. And then I worked for a biotechnology company for a little while. And then I started writing full time and then teaching martial arts the side for a dojo. But now the design work has become pretty much full time, and the Bushcraft Global stuff has come full time job, so it's kind of plumed up. But it's not that easy to, unless you're Ken Onion, to just have a full time job designing. That's like you have to do a lot of work for that. So there's promoting, marketing, and things like that that you have to help with as well.
So our listeners who aren't into like the greatest designers in the world and stuff. Mm-hmm. Just talk a little bit about Ken Onion.
Well, he's really good friends with Aerosmith. And one time at SHOT Show, I look over and Ken is in the booth and Steven Tyler, that's his name, right? Yeah, was in our booth during SHOT Show. So I got to meet him, and he really wanted the Condor machete prototype. And I was like, oh, you can't have that. It's the only prototype. And Steven Tyler was like, come on, man. I was like, no, I have something Steven Tyler can't have. But anyway, Ken Onion, probably know a lot more about his background and stuff from Hawaii, right?
Yeah, he lives out in Hawaii. He was the youngest inductee into the Knife Hall of Fame in America, which is a huge honor to do so. And he really worked with a lot of those earlier knife American knife makers, you know, Bob Loveless, A.G. Russell, all these guys who really formed and created a lot of the things that we just take for granted, you know.
Right.
Kit Carson creating the flipper.
Correct.
You know, stuff like that is really, obviously, we just kind of take it as like, oh, yeah, that's...
Yeah, Chris Reeves' liner lock change up and things, you know.
Totally. So you get to see that kind of history and go back into like the real like production idea and where we are now and see where we are in a history. Because we're in such a fun time for knives now. There's so many brands, so many different ways, and knives are fun too. It's a lot less utilitarian than it used to be. You can have fun with knives and cool designs. And Ken's a legend in the industry. He's made some of the best knives. I mean, I'm sure everybody's familiar with the Onion series over at Kershaw and his Blur and a lot of the work he's done with us. Some of the new stuff he's had coming out is really cool. We got some new facets coming out. A lot of really cool Ken. And we started actually working with his son too.
Oh, cool.
We had a first knife with Kenny Onion. So
Okay.
Yeah, we got the Bamboozled. That was his first knife. So really cool. Kind of expanding the Onion world and really training the next generation.
Yeah.
He's got people like Jeff Park working underneath him.
Excellent.
Kind of picking up on that information. And that's really cool. Yeah. Real honor to work with Ken.
Yeah. Like Ken's been, I think, making designs since the 80s, like for companies or something along that line.
Yeah.
In like the late 80s, and you see his products everywhere, and he's just such a treasure to the knife world as far as design work. Just some incredible designs, but he's also really nice to talk to.
Yeah, he's the nicest guy, and he also he invented like the assisted opening knife. Mm-hmm. So he read the laws, he found a circumnavigation to get around automatic knife laws. And and that the rest is history. And sometimes that's lost on us. So it's fun to trace back into the history books and see where
that
it all started.
The foundation is super, important in the knife world. And you can go to like some guys who might not even know who Bob Loveless is or Skagel or, you know, even more Seth Knives or something like that. And that is a good point. The fact that like some of those are, lost among the times, you know, people might not know who Gil Hibben is, but he invented the Rambo knife, you know. And Lyle, you know, still helped to invent the Rambo knife. And, you know, there is this wonderful thing that now we're in a saga where people are starting to pay attention to it more, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Top five greatest knife makers.
Ooh. I have personal ones, and then I have the ones that, like, everybody would probably go to.
Go with it. Top ten, but your five
My five favorite personals, there is, let's see, L.T. Wright. Charles May, who's not really known recently, but he was a really, really, really crisp designer. Vox, Jesper Voxenes. He has some really, really interesting designs with multiple companies, too. And he's a knife maker as well. And he did some of their early work on powder steel, saying, hey, you can make these into choppers and things, too. And honestly, he's not a knife maker, but Laren Thomas, because there's so many new things in the metal world that I'm learning through his book, and that's really like helped me understand a lot more of areas where, you know, I'm not so good at, because I just like to go cut stuff, is metallurgy, and learning a lot more about that. So definitely those are like my top five big ones, but not just the only ones, because I love all knives too. For sure. Yep.
How about you, Bryce?
I really like Michael Walker's work, A.G. Russell too. I really like the A.G. Russell brand in general. I get to spend a lot of time with them, and I really like their they're very focused, and there's no BS. It's just, this is logical, and they're really back to the fundamentals of what makes a knife very functional. So I really appreciate A.G. Russell's stuff. I'll jump on Jesper as well. Mm-hmm. Huge fan. I just got my first giant mouse.
Oh, cool.
He was doing he was running around at all the Filson stores across the country, and so I got to go see him.
Oh, cool.
He's another cool guy to talk to, but I love his kind of like Scandinavian simplicity. It's all very beautiful, smooth lines and utilitarian.
Yeah, but he puts these like big, he does like his own spin where he puts these big holes in them sometimes and stuff. And that, you know, I think he had a background as a cartoonist or something like that back in the day. And you can almost see that if you look at it hard with some of the designs of his that are just really cool and different for a knife. There's only so much you can do, you know, to a knife blade, and to be able to do something refreshing is really neat.
That's a tough part, is to break away from the mold. And Ken's another great one about that. Like, Ken obviously is going to be on my list here too, but he thinks about, like, he almost puts like movie plots together.
That's
to kind of come up with his knife and sort of get the juices flowing.
Yeah.
I like, love hearing those things.
That, you know, when he pulled me aside at Blade Show at the pit at like 2 a.m. and we were talking, and I'm like, how he told me about that setup, and I've started to adapt that for some of my stories, and it's really, really inspired me to come up with some really cool, neat designs. Like, for example, there's one with artisan cutlery called the Reckhart, and it's if Horace Kephart and Rex Applegate who's like the guy who did Kill or Get Killed knife fighting, mm-hmm. and then one of the founders of Great Smoky Mountains, Horace Kephart, you know, woods and camping and all that. We're hanging out, and I was like, man, what if they hung out and sketched a knife on a napkin at a bar or a restaurant or something? And that's how like I put both of those designs together. But that really came like from Ken Onion, you know, saying, hey, make a story first and then form the knife afterwards. And I really liked that aspect. It really helped me, you know, expand even more into the knife design mentality, I guess.
Yeah, that's great. Bryce, have you ever designed a knife?
No, I have not. I'm trying to even think where I would start with that. I've kind of like, you start dabbling in the idea of doing it.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm going to design something that's already out there.
Well, that's, I mean, no matter what you are,
I know.
It's going to be a pointy edge with the handily holdy thing.
Right, right, right. Yeah.
That's pretty cool. You know, and then I like the designers that kind of think outside the box. You know, mm-hmm. personally in our kind of stable of designers, TJ Schwartz is another
yeah.
one. He came from automotive design.
Yeah, absolutely.
So he really thinks outside the box and using like his overlanding skills, mm-hmm. he blends those together in such a seamless way.
TJ's might be coming on my jungle trip this year.
Oh, dude.
Yeah.
And such a cool dude.
Yeah, I can't wait to talk to him. I can learn how to actually AutoCAD correctly. That'd be nice too.
I love his little shop too. He's got two CNC machines and a beautiful efficiency with his own production. He's
yeah.
a really interesting character, and we're so lucky to get to work with him.
Yeah, and he's just really nice to talk to, too.
Man.
Real cool guy.
Great discussions.
So how is it to be a nice knife designer, Joe? Like, how do you do it? Maybe what's your process?
You think about knives way too much. You think about knives all the time, and then you start thinking of them at nighttime, and then you think about, okay, how would this function differently? Is that a whole different design, or am I just trying to fix this design a little bit more? So, and also, like, that's just for, like, a design you know, aspect of going out and using stuff and seeing, okay, you know, Alberto or somebody is using a knife this way. It'd be much cooler if we raised the choil here or did something like that.
Alberto is who?
He's a Yukuna guide down in South America. And, you know, watching people who are better than me at using knives teaches me a lot too. And then, you know, not being afraid to like push boundaries of knives and stuff to get mm-hmm. out of the box, because you can get into a rut designing really easily, I think. And I haven't been able to stop. It's almost like addictive, you know, designing, especially when I get better at, you know, using some of the computer software and stuff. Man, if I ever got one of those 3D printers and really spent the time, it'd be crazy. I bet you people are keeping me away from that on purpose. But, you know, that's just one person's, you know, aspect of knife design. And knife designing, you know, as a whole, there's so many different ways to put a spin on something that's been part of our human story forever. And, you know, I think that's one of the inspiring things about it, too. It's like it never gets old to get new ideas. At least for me, I never get tired of getting new ideas. It's like, one second, I have like I have a notebook with me. Go, oh, okay, this thing in 14C 28N instead of this is going to be really cool for a dive knife or something.
It's kind of like the general idea is it cuts things.
Right.
It's kind of like when you're painting, mm-hmm. you've got paint and you've got a canvas.
That's it.
Right.
You're painting. Yeah. And for like me personally, I've started to get back into using different mediums to do it. So I've actually started painting a knife recently, just so I could get away from, you know, trying to change a curve on the computer. Just and really fun, because then it was a knife design that turned out to be put in the log, and you could have this like whole story behind it. And then I had to put it back on a computer to get the actual measurements. But it's just a canvas. That's what knife design is: a piece of steel. When you're grinding it, it's just a canvas that you can work on.
Could anybody design a knife?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Can anybody design a pretty one? That's also, can anybody design a functional one? That always goes crazy.
Right,
you
right.
kind of have, you know, the various balances you want to get with any knife design too. But I'm not like necessarily like a great knife. The people I would talk to with those type of questions are Ken Onion and stuff, because they can really tell you like decades of designing, you mm-hmm. Know how.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A friend of mine, Joe, who's actually been on the podcast and has done some videos with me. He's gotten big into knife making.
Mm-hmm.
So last year, he got one of those little forges and everything.
Yeah.
We started working with some 1095. And so I finally, like, made a knife start to finish, you know, kind of, like, working it and coming up with, like, this. It's a cool little puku.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's really interesting, like heat treating it in your oven.
You know? Yeah. I'm not a great...
Ovens work better than... Toaster ovens. Toaster ovens.
Yeah.
I kind of ruined
from
the
toaster
heat
ovens. Yeah. Yeah. Where you get the warped up, you know, blades all over the place too.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me, for designing, it's just a lot of backyard modding, you know, going crazy. I got with Condor, because I was always modding my machetes and stuff like a madman on the grinder. And sometimes you can form a whole new knife just by, you know, taking...
Just what is modding? Just tell...
Modifying.
Okay.
Modifying a knife, you know, just by taking a handle and putting what the ergonomics you like on it more. And it can almost become a whole new knife design that way.
Yep.
And, you know, doing knives from start to scratch, though, it's so... I try and stay away from it. Otherwise, that's all I'm going to start doing. Mm-hmm. It'd be going that, like, I can already see myself going down the rabbit hole at like 3 o'clock in the morning on the grinder going, okay, I better stop now.
That's so cool. It's become so much more accessible to actually do knives with, like, you know, YouTube, could teach you anything you want to learn, and the Forge and Fire effect and all those things.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. And what was that? What's that new knife print? Knife Print 2.0 just came out. It's an AutoCAD friendly program where you put the knife design in there and then they send it to them and they water jet cut it and bring you the blade back.
So cool.
And yeah, they have templates on there too, so that people can learn how to modify a knife and then make their own from like a normal, you know, rudimentary bushcraft, you know, design or something. It's neat.
That's really cool. I mean, even like the price of CNC machines have been coming down.
Yeah.
And like you said, the 3D printers, I've dabbled with that. And I'd love to see everybody online, how they customize our knives.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of our knives are so affordable. Yeah. And they'll go out there and do amazing things. Like the Pilar from Jesper is probably our most modified knife out there.
Yeah.
People do all custom scales. You can 3D print backspacers. You can do all sorts of cool stuff. And I think that's kind of the future, the way that the knife industry is going.
Funny that
is customization.
You said that. They said one of the predictions, I think David C. Anderson said, was there's going to be more people paying attention to modifications on things. Even just like at Blade Show, there was a guy with the Swiss Army knife. Of course, I bought like three of them, like micarta to go on the Swiss Army knives and titanium. Awesome.
I love the custom sacks out there. They do so many cool things. You can put so many cool tools on there now.
Yeah,
I just got into that industry so much. It's such a huge
another thing to get into, right? You're going to have sack parts all over, Swiss Army knife parts all over your workshop then too. I already do.
Very cool.
So I'm not familiar with that. So people have just started to make various different parts that you would add to your Swiss Army knife or handles or whatever. Okay.
It's really cool to go see the different projects. Somebody
like
trying to make a spider.
The AR of knives or something.
Totally.
Right? Okay.
Or you make one that's TSA friendly or, you know, all the different themes. You put a different scale on there instead of like the plastic scales, throw some micarta on it. But you can really customize the tools for you and what you need in your everyday cutting experience. It's really cool.
Or make them glow in the dark, which is also super cool. But so like this whole scene, people, you know, it used to have there was like that one guy who would take, you know, a Swiss Army knife, for instance, apart like back in the day. And now everybody's like, this is how to do it in 3 minutes. And, you know, there would be what like the Benchmade, Griptilian, like there was like a little group of guys who would make their own little micarta handles of that. But now it's like for a whole bunch of different models everywhere.
It's awesome. I'm all about it.
There's cool. There's modders.
Yeah.
The future is modding.
Yeah.
I think so. I agree.
Nice. So how many knives didn't you hit like a historical monument kind of benchmark as far as how many knives you designed in a year?
I finally counted is what it took. And so I got up to, but you know, designing for Condor was a little bit different. I started from the very beginning, you know, and they had me as just one of the main designers there. So they let me have like 5 to 10 designs out a year. And that's not normal. I got blessed being able to do that. But now I'm like over 150. 200 now, but Polo from Topps Knives has got me beat, by the way. I just found that out for sure. He's got like 500.
Wow.
And then Ken Onion, God knows how many he
has. That's what I'm saying. I don't know. I'm trying to think, who's the most prolific? Who's got the most designs? I don't know that we could ever figure that out.
No. It's just, I only just like was looking at it because I was able to move the Excel sheet around. You know, Polo's been doing it since like the early 2000s and stuff too. And then Ken Onion. I mean, just imagine how many he has.
Oh, dude.
So we have a knife sitting on the table. Who wants to pick it up and
talk
about it?
I'd love to
pick it up. Of course you do.
So
describe it for our listeners.
Okay. Ooh, I'm gonna describe it in like a you can't do ASMR style, but like for the podcast, we have a very elongated handle with a large choil at the end, following into what one would assume is a flat tip on the end, but is actually sharpened, kind of like. Did Graham do the Rozelles?
Yeah.
Okay, kind of like the Rozelle folder, like a razor-looking folder, but now on an elongated handle for chopping very well. That's about as far as I can go.
Yeah, so how long is it?
It's a
It's got a pretty long, big handle. So.
Yeah, it's like 8 inches of micarta, guys, but thinner. with a like a 4-inch or 3.5-inch long, 2-inch wide blade. It kind of looks like what you would do if you'd put edges and make it more pointy to a I don't know what that looks like.
I mean, it kind of
I was going to say shovel, but now I'm like, no, that doesn't look like a shovel, Joe.
It looks like a it's a like a meat cleaver almost.
Yeah,
like a mini meat cleaver.
Yeah,
but more elegant.
Yeah, it's like
with a really long handle that swoops down, so you would be able to wrap your index finger around it and get a nice wrist chopping action.
Yeah, it's a compact lever, but you can still choke up and do fine mm-hmm. work with it. And you say compact lever, but it's like mostly handle, guys. So you can really choke up on the back and get more of an extended.
So
use
what is
on
it? What is it called?
It's the Nax, and you were spot on. It was a John Graham
cool.
creation. So
excellent.
That's based on kind of our razel pattern, which was CRKT historians will remember.
Yeah, I have
one. Razel. You might know the SS7, which was the,
yeah,
the
stainless
like
steel
long,
one. Yeah.
Yeah, it was like a machete style. It was sharpened on three edges. It had serrations on the back.
No, I was thinking of a different one.
Bottle opener on the bottom and a glass breaker. So it's just like, it's such a cool tool. I always lusted after one of those. There's a guy down in the warehouse who had one. And I couldn't get it off.
But
this is totally like the Razel is a completely squared off pattern.
Yeah.
It's completely squared off with sharpened front. And this one kind of kicks that front slightly back to give you a little bit of an angle. There's a little bit of belly that runs along the front. Usually it's almost like a full flat Warncliffe style blade, but this one's got mm-hmm. a little belly mm-hmm. towards the front. All 1075 steel, kind of hammer finished. I think we kind of partnered up with you guys to do this.
Yeah, I didn't know if we were allowed to talk to that.
Yeah, we can.
You guys got a podcast. Yes, sometimes companies will have other companies utilize them to make stuff, and that's very common throughout everywhere.
Right.
And of course, so
it's called OEM, right?
Yeah, OEM.
So what's it stand for?
Original Equipment Manufacturing, yeah. Right?
Yep.
Okay, good. Finally got it. Because sometimes in the car they say something different, but I can't remember what.
Condor does a really good job of, I just call it primitive.
Mm-hmm.
Like more of that primitive.
Yeah, absolutely.
Unfinished, but finished on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's more, utilitarian style, and that's because mm-hmm. they've been making machetes since the 1960s, but even their like $8 machetes have a lifetime warranty on them.
Wow.
And it's because people really dwell upon a machete culture there. It's glorious. Everybody has a machete. It's an agricultural tool. It's not a weapon, day-to-day stuff. But they're making a lot of different agricultural tools that are able to take a huge beating. And that's why 1075 is a great steel of choice for a large chopper like this.
So difference between 1075 and 1095, because people are really familiar with 1095.
Amount of carbon.
Amount of carbon. That's it.
So what does that do for a knife?
More carbon. You're going to add more carbides. It's going to be a little bit tougher on the top end. It's kind of a balance. We use a lot of 1055 and 1075 for more harder use stuff. A lot of our axes are 1055. It's just a really good balance. I'm glad it's taken a while for like the American market to get used to carbon steel. I think the idea of rusting really still bothers people.
Yeah.
I get that. And like Mora was kind of one of the early ones that got me into it. And I really appreciate a good carbon steel and how it works. It holds a great edge. It's easy to sharpen. Just good all around. And I think it's a perfect kind of partnership for this one. And it's got a little bit of a coating on there, but it'll kind of show its age. And
yeah, it'll still patina and be its own.
I remember getting my first Mora and then going out and getting oranges and sticking in there to
yeah.
pour some patina on it. That was so much fun. Mm-hmm. That knife's mm-hmm. still near and dear to my heart, too.
Mine was mustard. I always tried to do like tiger stripe mustard in
yes.
things. So, guys, when you can modify your own carbon steel knives, if they don't have a coating on them with oxidation from some sorts of acids or things like vinegar, mustard, and stuff at home. And, that's kind of one of the cool things that you can see is, like, it's not a shiny piece of gear anymore. It's, like, mm-hmm. got a story behind it. And as long as you take care of it, just a small amount of oil, maybe, most of the time, and it's fine. Everybody thinks it's going to fall apart rusting, and it doesn't.
Everyone takes care of their cast iron pans.
Yeah,
just take
the
that
crud.
Logic and apply it to your carbon steel knives.
Yeah.
It's pretty simple.
Oh, very
good point.
Really.
Just don't
yeah.
heat it up,
Yeah.
So when you force a patina, like, you can use lemons or
potatoes
or
yeah.
onions or that whole process actually it's a chemical process that
yeah.
actually adds a measure of protection to the mm-hmm. knife, right?
Yep.
Yeah, well, in most cases it can be a measure of protection, but also sometimes depending on what you use, sometimes stuff will cling to it a little bit more if it's a sticky type of etch or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see that too much around here though.
Yeah, we did a video actually. I was talking about my friend Joe. Not this Joe, but my buddy who we've been making some knives, and he worked with us a little bit. I said, hey, just find a video you want to do. So he did one of those, like, all you see is his hands, and he patinaed a Mora knife.
Oh, cool.
A bunch of different ways. And it went semi-viral. I think it has like 1.6 million views right now on Ultimate Survival Tips. But the problem was he did it in, what's the Apple?
Apple Cider.
No, the Apple program that you get that is the stock video editing program.
After Effects. No, Illumination, something
one.
Like that.
Yeah, whatever that one. Anyway, they have soundtracks built in there. And the number one, people were like, love this video, hate the music. He got one of those loops
that loops
every 15
garage
seconds.
Band?
GarageBand.
Is GarageBand? That's what I'm a dedicated Android user.
Yeah. Oh, okay, me too.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. It's not Final Cut. It's the other one.
the other thing.
Wow, we're all striking out. So,
you Apple users can tell
I'm
us in the comments.
Yelling at us right now.
But he did that, and it's a cool video except for the soundtrack.
Well, you should just do a beatboxing thing in the background and have a soundtrack of you just doing the remix version.
Oh, there you go.
That'd be perfect.
There you go. Actually, I think we could change the audio track on that.
There you
on
go.
YouTube. Yeah, we should do that. Okay, so here's a question.
Mm-hmm.
Before we do that, we were talking about rust. We went over a couple of knives in the Condor booth today.
Mm-hmm.
And you like rust, right?
Yeah, ish. But I just like what I like is not shiny gear. Honestly, I actually started I haven't done anything with it yet, but I got an Instagram account where I want to dedicate it to the stories behind pieces of equipment that are really, really patinaed and used up and things. And with the rust, you know, it's just a barrier for more rust in some instances, because if you're using it, the rust goes away.
Mm-hmm.
Like for machete, of course, I'm thinking machetes because I'm warped.
Right. So what do people do if they get 1075, 1055, 1095? What's the best way to protect their gear, and like how often? How do they do that?
Ballistol is like a really good go-to, you know, material to take. But any type of oil, like
iMovie,
like you said,
iMovie. It's iMovie.
iMovie. Got okay. it.
Sorry, it was killing me.
So obvious.
So iMovie will get your knives rusty too. And any type of oil or work every once in a while, and getting the rust off, you know, I'll save that method for YouTube so nobody ganks it. But there's a bushcraft method too. But like using a rust eraser and stuff along that line. But any
have you ever used Flitz?
Pardon?
Flitz.
Good stuff.
Yeah. I've heard about it. I just don't have any yet.
Yeah, it works pretty good.
I really like Flitz. You can even use some of their products to put it on, and it'll help keep like tape and stuff from sticking to it. It helps keep it kind of like, I think that's another thing that might be the future of having like a kind of a light ceramic layer or something that you put on
right,
oil.
Right, yeah.
It just kind of doesn't make things stick to it. I like that product.
Like,
Flitz makes
what's that graphite stuff?
If it just leaves like a silicon coating on it.
Yeah, they have a silicon polish that they gave to us. And we were trying that out, and it was just going through tape and not leaving the tape lines like normal.
Wow.
I think there's kind of there's some potential there that I don't think has been yet realized.
Ooh, you could be the first one to do that.
There it is. We'll save that for the YouTube video.
Yeah, that's a patent thing. You guys didn't hear that. Edit that out. But you know, it's just use of a tool, and you know, stainless steel is kind of a new thing. We've been using metal carbon steel tools most of the time. We've had thumbs, so
yeah.
Actually, we had thumbs before steel, but still. side rant. But anyway, so I mean, you have a primitive knife made by Imakasa Condor.
Yep.
And do you see rust problems with that ever?
No, they actually have some sort of a coating.
Yeah.
I don't know what the coating is, but we have not really had a problem. Our leather sheath, you don't want to have it sitting in a leather sheath that's soaked.
Right.
It's kind of just common sense. Take your knife out, dry it off, mineral oil, whatever, just wipe it.
Yeah, you know,
any oil, right?
Food grade mineral oil is awesome too, because you can use that like while you're, you know, around watermelon and stuff too.
Yeah.
That works very well. Well, I'm just thinking cutting watermelon or something with the knife. But food grade mineral oil is fantastic too, but sometimes you got some of these oils attract ants, so you want to be careful with that. It's not that common, but it'll happen.
I didn't do this on purpose, but I feel like I'm gonna ask. We have another knife on the table.
Ooh,
what do you guys think of that?
That's your MSK. I've seen this guy before.
That's the wrong one.
Oh.
Oh, you can talk about that
one. Yeah, I saw that down in the jungle.
There's the other one.
Point down the center line. That's good. I like that.
That's the pack one.
Awesome. You got a point down the center line clip point with a flat or with a Oh man, I can't do it this quickly. I've been shot showed out. It's
already.
It's a point down the center line, secondary bevel, flat grind with a black coating and a dark patinaed micarta handle. That's all I got.
Yeah, that's tops. They do the really nice beeswax. They do the beeswax infusion in the handles.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Nice. You got your Bow drill
scoop
right there.
Same as the MSK1, the removable bolts. And
you were telling me you got a little storage underneath the handles
as
well.
Yeah,
oh, cool.
So you can get in
put
there
the little Wazoo gear in there and stuff.
The little gear goes in there, yeah.
It's really cool. Like in our own line, it reminds us a lot when we were lucky enough to work with Karen Hood back in the day.
Oh, Karen, okay. I love Karen.
Okay. I mean, I used to get Ron's videos on VHS.
Oh, yeah,
I used to hand them back and forth. He was the original survivalist to me.
Big time. Dude, I was good friends with Ron.
But this handle reminds me so much of the Karen Hood chopper, which I got before it went discontinued, really like it. It's such a cool product. Tops makes such a cool product in general, too, and this reminds me a lot of that handle. It's really comfortable.
They were a natural for the MSK1. I mean, we had two other manufacturers before we landed there. I didn't know they were going to even be interested.
Oh, and I tell you to contact them,
Think? You were kind of encouraging me, and then, of course, I've known Leo and Craig for a long time just through doing the YouTube videos and reviewing their gear. And we sat down with them at SHOT Show, which, guys, we are at SHOT Show. That's why we have these two yahoos sitting here.
It was an escape room getting up here.
Guys. It was an escape room.
Yeah, like we're in a small little yellow room that looks like it was taken out of Belton Abbey or something. And that's where we're at now. But we've escaped a sea of patches and Black Rifle coffee smells
and
everywhere.
Tactical backpacks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good. Okay. Next question. Anything else on the knives?
Well, what kind of sheath are you coming out with with that guy?
Is the sheath here? I've got the sheath. So the sheath, I'm actually wearing. Let me see that.
Oh, there we go.
Yep.
Oh,
yeah.
He's so taking his pants off right now in the podcast. No, I'm just kidding. He's got a big leather sheath on there.
It actually fits really well in the MSK1 primitive sheath.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. It actually fits perfect. So I'm carrying it in that sheath.
That looks great.
So it was designed for the primitive. It was designed for a Kydex sheath, but it fits really well in the primitive. Oh, here it is. This is the stock sheath, but we did a drop leg carry too, so it normally has a clip on it. Yep.
And who's this little guy?
That's the MSK1 Mini. Yep.
Cool.
Actually, we're working with Condor on getting us a primitive version of that.
Ooh, primitive mini.
Yeah. Well, cool. Next question.
Yeah.
Bryce and I were talking about this a little bit before. What is bushcraft, Joe? Since you're it's
bushcraft
part of
global?
The name of your... No, what is bushcraft?
Oh, what is bushcraft?
Yes.
You get a bunch of guys fighting on YouTube and the internet about the definition of this thing. It's freaking hilarious.
In a bunch of podcasts.
Yeah. If I had to be defining bushcraft, it'd be the use of the environment around you to make yourself more comfortable through tools and through knowledge.
Okay.
So that would be one thing. And Tim Smith had this thing, a really cool, you guys can look it up on YouTube. Tim Smith was one of the original bushcraft schools before the word bushcraft was cool, like in the 90s. And he said, you have primitive skills, you have survival, and you have camping, and all of that together in the middle is kind of bushcraft, where all of that stuff kind of becomes this amalgam of all of this together. Because you have, you know, flint nappers, and of course now the bushcraft guys are spoon carvers, and you know, the survival guys are I don't know what, you know, just depending on what, because they're doing both of that stuff, but making traps too. So it's kind of like, you know, doing all that stuff. Because like when we're backpacking, we're not using a knife much except to open up the, you know, the mountain house and things like that. But now people are going, hey, I'm not going to bring, depending on where their environment is, and if they're in a national forest where they can do this or somewhere, hey, I'm not even going to bring tent stakes now. I'm going to whittle my own out of, you know, dead tree or dead logs and things. And that's where knife use is becoming more and more popular, I think.
Nice.
Rant off.
Nice. I was just saying that bushcraft, I mean, it's as simple as using a knife while you're camping.
Yeah, it is.
Right?
Yeah. Totally.
It's the knife helps you survive better. The knife helps you be more comfortable. The knife helps you intrinsically, you know, just feel more responsible for having hands and making stuff that you know that you can make, which is funny because I'm a horrible carver. But, you know, it gives you a little bit more self-confidence when you have a knife on you. Hey, I can do some more stuff with this.
Joe, since you're like kind of like a primitive historian, like what was first, the wheel or the knife?
the cutting edge, gave us the edge over all other living creatures. We did not get to where we are today with wheels, with internet, with cold fusion or whatever just came out recently and all that by chewing on bones. We had an edge, and that edge, this is actually like a quote from Steve Watts, my mentor, the edge, the knife edge gave us the edge over all other living critters to be able to do stuff. With the knife, we were able to make fire. With the knife, we were able to process food. We were able to use protection more, and we were able to get into places where we weren't able to get into, like for animals and stuff like that, or harvest or make other tools with it. So that's my thing.
Oh, that's cool.
So knife. The wheel was
afterwards. Thumbs helped too.
Yeah, thumbs. The thumbs really helped too. I like thumbs. They're great. I still have all mine somehow. So give it time.
So Bryce, you're into ultralight backpacking, right?
Sure.
Yeah. Cuban fiber.
Yeah.
I'm ready to talk about some ultralight backpacking.
Yeah.
So cool.
Yeah.
So talk about ultralight backpacking. Like,
yeah.
Do you carry knives there? I mean, they're pretty heavy, aren't they?
Not really. He has to. Honestly, like the knife is, it's funny, an ultralight backpacking, the knife is kind of just for little use cases. It's not that, and like I don't carry Mountain House anymore,
right.
You know? So I'm carrying all prepackaged meals that I've made.
Mm-hmm.
So a knife for my case is really just opening or like cutting, like almost like an emergency case. So,
yeah.
And also, I actually would much prefer to have a small pair of scissors. That's mm-hmm. really more functional to me for cutting out moleskin
yeah.
and stuff like
oh,
that.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
But, I mean, I probably end up going too knife heavy. That's kind of just...
That's what we do. I mean, when I go out there, 50 pounds of machetes every time.
I know. Sometimes I do the mental math.
3 pounds of gear, you know, 50 pounds of machetes.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
When I don't have that much of a machete, growing up on the West Coast, machetes aren't super useful to us. We're much more axe-based.
Ah, yes.
We have a lot more trees and a lot harder stuff.
Until you start using a machete more, I say that.
To.
But, I mean, it's really interesting because, like, that same deal for backpacking, you know, my biggest thing for using a knife is spreading peanut butter on crackers and things along that line.
It's
fixing equipment.
Yeah. This is fun though. Also, like backpacking introduces you to so much other things too.
Mm-hmm.
Like the exotic uses of titanium are always fascinating. If you can make something, you can always make it out of titanium and just a quarter ounce lighter or something like that. And I love all the gear. It's just in general gear, kind of a gear-do in general. I love all that. I love flashlights and knives and all that. So getting into it and like talking about, Cuban fiber.
Yeah.
Moving up from like going from a ripstop nylon, going to Cuban fiber, which doesn't absorb water.
Yeah.
Is such a huge jump in technology.
Oh, man, that's that that one tarp that I had down at the trip that you were on. It's made by Jack's or Better. No, it's not Jack's or Better. It's Z-Pack.
Yeah,
it's
great
really
stuff.
Got, and it's like it's now like a 12-year-old Cuban fiber. It's not crinkly anymore. It's very like flowy. It's really weird. And now I'm going to get another one made that's even longer because I have more stuff being a bushcrafter to bring out into the woods that I need to cover.
It's rad. It's amazing how lightweight you can get a tent nowadays.
Oh, man. So Cuban fiber, well, it's like the sailcloth, right?
It's exactly. That's where it came from, my racing sails.
And this ultralight stuff even Matt Graham has a backpack made out of it that he loves to backpack with. But they make backpacks, ponchos, tarps, sometimes even hammocks and definitely tents and things to have all these ultralight super space super material.
Is that like a brand name, Cuban fiber?
No. It's a – is it?
I think it is a brand name, but it's a style of fiber too.
Mm-hmm.
It's Dyneema based, I believe.
Yeah, it is Dyneema based.
So Dyneema is
fascinating.
I learned about that spearfishing using it on the reel, and I got like some. It was arbor quality, so it was for arborists to throw a little sack over it to get
the
lines going.
Yeah, yeah.
But I would wind that up on my spearfishing reel.
Oh,
it
cool!
Is such tough stuff. I still carry a little pouch of it around all the time.
Yeah,
because it is. It's got like a 600-pound breaking strength, and it's tiny.
It's the stuff that they make the blue. Correct me if I'm wrong, the blue steel, I think, is made from Dyneema, but the stuff that they put on winches for some of the lines that are non-cable when they want not for like winches on a Jeep, you know, they'll make it out of Dyneema and other stuff too.
Even fishing lines starting to see that
stuff. Yeah, big time.
So the characteristics are it's light and it's super strong.
Super duper strong.
Okay.
Yeah.
It doesn't absorb water, which is huge. I mean, if you're in rain long enough and ripstop nylon, it's going to get through. It's going to start getting through the seams. It's going to, even if you've done a good job taping off all your seams, it's going to be a problem. So this is just, not only is it lighter and stronger, it's also just better with the weather. So
yeah, absolutely.
Really cool stuff.
And it wears like nails. People don't believe it, but it wears like nails.
Really?
Yeah. It's not like it's not like cotton duck canvas, but you know, like there should be tears in my tarp. Fatigue tears and the little spots where the grommets are from flapping in the breeze. And they don't have those fatigue tears. There's no, there's probably technical terms for the textiles here, but there's no string of the threads coming out and like pulling like a long, gross little fiber.
So you just talked about tech. Now, when we went to the jungle, the guys down there, they hardly packed anything.
Yeah,
and they made everything mostly out of stuff in the environment.
Yeah, that's
talk about
much
that.
More.
That and the like ultralight.
Yeah, that I mean that's the ultralight backpack. I mean ultralight style where they've been doing it all their life. And
I mean Alberto was making everything out of wherever he was.
Yeah, we're gonna be doing an ultralight thing. I think we're gonna call it jungle predator, where you just have a. We might not even have a tarp. We're just gonna have a mosquito net because you're going to make your own hammock out there.
Oh, nice.
We might make your own tarp. The only thing I'm a little bit apprehensive about is that takes forever to do your own foliage style clearing out stuff. And if we're in this certain park I want to do it in, it's going to like knock over a whole bunch of trees just to make one part. But yeah, they go down there and they're able to weave all of these different shelters from nature down there. And the paracord is all over the trees because
totally
it's the vines.
I want to make one of the backpacks like he can make.
Oh, man. Yeah, those they're incredible. And then when he's done, you can just throw it out there because it'll biodegrade. So it's very, very green.
So when are you going to do that trip? Are you still working on dates?
No. Well, it's going to be somewhat private because there's a couple of professional special force type guys who want to do something like that. And it's coming up. Gorn just needs to stop. My partner down.
Would any friends that you really like be able to squeeze into a trip?
Yeah,
like that?
But that's gonna be. It's gonna be. You're gonna have to be really like. I'm gonna be running 3 miles a day beforehand because I want to be able to cover lots of ground because we're gonna be foraging for all sorts of things out there and some of the things we might have to chase after.
Nice.
For a while. But anyway, it's ultralight. You know, when you carry ultralight stuff, you carry more stuff in your head,
right?
Rather than in there, except
just
for the coffee.
Just talk about that. Talk about that, like mindsets,
I got
skills,
one rant,
tactics,
though.
And gear kind of thing.
When I'm doing like the measuring everything.
People want to start with gear all the time, right?
Yeah.
Why do they want to start with gear?
Because it's cool and
it's easy. You just pay.
Yeah,
for it.
You just like, pay for it.
Now it's
you pay for it.
Yep.
Yeah. Right.
And then what happens? Then they have it.
Then they have it.
Yeah, and then I have like 10,000 knives then after a while.
Does it give people a false sense of security?
It can. It can, absolutely. I mean, it's every axes, for instance. It's like everybody's got this is like an American rant. It's not. Americans' God-given right to be able to use an axe like right off the bat. Just pick it up and be able to use that because we've had such a rich history in forestry. And, you know, we have all these different patterns and beautiful styles of axes. But people still don't know how to split right. But they bought the splitter online, you know, but then they end up hurting their back or missing it entirely and going into the ground and screwing up their new axe. And it's just because people can have a false sense of security of learning stuff. But then they can go on YouTube now and learn some of these skill sets from some of the designers, some of the people who are out there influencing some of the ways this stuff is being used, too. Well, yeah, that's an elongated thing. And for the ultralight stuff I can't do, I must carry coffee with me. I can't do the no-dose.
The pills.
Yeah, that's no fun. I want coffee in the morning.
The emotional side of a warm cup of coffee.
Right,
it's like,
yeah.
It's the first thing you do. You get the jet boil going or whatever stove you got.
Yeah, so there's like hardcore ultralighters who won't even bring stuff to cook.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and they'll just go by and just the water is the most important thing. And then 50 miles a day. Let's do it on the AT.
Oh, dude, yeah.
That's crazy. That's
couscous
crazy.
In a Talenti jar.
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
People are really into that now, the no-cook style. I still a nice warm meal at least once a day.
You know, whatever happened to backpacking the Pepsi can stoves? Why aren't those so popular
anymore? I went
through
such a huge phase of making those. I loved it. I got really good. I got pretty decent at making those things. The problem for me, I had to fill mine with fiberglass because if you don't do that and they spill over, you've basically just got a huge
big old pile
fire.
Of smelly stuff.
But I still use like Esbit stoves.
Yeah.
Esbit's great.
Absolutely.
It's always going away. I really enjoy that. But sometimes
can you still get the fuel for that?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
I literally like those tags. I keep them in my emergency packs.
Yeah,
in general,
they're great.
Once those start going, they're not stopping.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I do like can stoves. That's a great fun project. Everyone should go try to do that. It's super simple, really cheap, and really satisfying when you get that thing going. And it's kind of a cool little piece of
technology.
It's
basically a rocket stove, right?
Exactly.
But you make it out of a Pepsi can.
Soda can.
Yeah.
It's
a lot of fun.
There's a challenge where you can do it out of one can and the pocket knife out in the field that's really fun, too, made by Alan Halkin. And the other stuff, I used a perlite in mine too.
Okay.
The Pedialyte, perlite.
Yeah.
That stuff really was absorptive for the what was it called? The rubbing alcohol. No. What alcohol is it?
Heat. They use like heat sometimes.
Yeah.
It's like a pure. But I'll just use denatured alcohol.
Yeah, denatured. That's it. Yeah, I knew there was a word for it. I couldn't think of it right now. I got like 3 gallons of it at my house.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, last question for you. What's your weight? What do you try to hit for your whole kit?
That's a great question.
The technical definition for ultralight is 15 pound base weight.
Oh, wow.
And so that's what I'm hovering around. I might be, I'm around there depending on how like a cushion I'm going to have, like how good of a time, you know?
So you go over 15, you're just not ultralight.
That's
anymore.
That's technical. I'm going to give it to you. You should start working towards that way, but you should always be comfortable. I think that's one thing too, as I've gotten older, I don't to go with like the foam mats anymore.
Yeah.
You know, I'll have something that's inflatable, but those have grown so much too. You know, you've got the newer styles. They're not like the Therm-a-Rest kind of self-inflating foam. But they fully inflate them, and they're very comfortable, very small, very lightweight.
Dude, I love my X-Ped that comes with its own lung, basically, so it fills it up the whole time.
I just got a Climate, finally.
Climates are great.
Climates are great. It's a lot smaller than the X-Ped. I love X-Ped.
Yeah, I do, too.
I think it's brilliant. But I cut like half the weight out with a Climate.
The Climate's
and it was
too.
Long and wide too. It's a long and wide.
I like their design too because Climates kind of cradle you, and that's one thing. Like when you're sitting on a Therm-a-Rest, you're sliding all over the place. It's kind of awkward, but that one kind of keeps you into the position, which I really enjoy. I love my Climate. It's a great product.
So what's the lightest you've gone for like a 3-day ultralight pack?
I've been down to 15 pounds. Okay. I've been under that. If you just go to like a really basic tarp tent, I did a lot of hiking in the Eastern Sierras where the weather is almost always favorable.
Mm-hmm.
Very little water. It's very warm, so you don't even need a tarp. We'll carry one between two guys, and you can really get the weight down. And going no cook really helps too.
Yeah, yeah.
You just gotta start making it, and that's what it is. You know, maybe you did buy that expensive piece of gear at the beginning, but it's a start of a journey.
Right.
And as you learn about it, you learn about how to cut that out, and you learn how little you need.
Yeah.
Because once you get back from a trip, lay everything out and be like, I didn't use that, didn't use that. Mm-hmm. But you get it's like a safety thing. A lot of people bring a lot of stuff that makes them feel safe.
Yeah.
And you don't need that.
I haven't done any ultralight backpacking forever just because I'm always bringing knives to promote or I'm bringing crap tons of video equipment because I want to, you know, film some cool stuff. And it's like, I stopped writing for a while because I miss always having to go out into the woods and bring another piece of equipment that I have to review. And I'm like, no, I just want to use this one for 2 weeks and really get to know it and stuff too. So I miss ultralight backpack. I'm going to get back into it now.
Yeah. Guys, this has been really fun.
Cool.
Before we head out of here, you want to leave our listeners with any thoughts?
Where did they find out about you, Bryce?
Yeah, yeah.
How'd they find me?
Or yeah.
These guys?
No, you. Oh. We know how to find him. They're already there.
Yeah, you guys can find me, crkt.com.
Cool.
Anywhere, Instagram, and on YouTube. They're letting me do some of the videos now.
Nice.
Which is nice.
All right.
So
send some people your way.
Yeah. Try to crack jokes, but it's just a lot of fun. I like sharing knives with everybody. It's just a lot of fun. Come say hey. I'm always at the Blade shows.
Cool.
NRA shows, SHOT Show. So, always
nice. Excellent. Joe, how about you?
Bushcraftglobal.com. Yes, I will update my website, guys. I'm too busy playing outside. Condor Tool Knife, Tops Knives. Artisan has some new stuff coming out, too. And, bushcraftglobal.com. Yeah. At some point, I'll be better at promoting myself.
And we didn't
you told me that, but...
You're doing good.
It'll work.
We didn't even get to beekeeping today.
No.
We'll do that.
When you need something, a Hail Mary out of your back pocket, we can kill an hour about bee stuff. I can tell you what the worst places to get stung, times when we're able to get the pheromones, the alarm pheromone. Oh, yeah, that's a whole another fun story. I had access to the synthetic version that made bees really ticked off and was able to play with that.
Nice. Well, guys, this was a lot of fun. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
All righty. Thank you.
All right, my friends, before we head out of here, don't forget to check out the new Pack One knife over at our mothership, ultimatesurvivaltips.com. While you're there, you can grab the show notes for this podcast, grab a ton of free training content, jump into our Survival Masterclass, and subscribe to my free weekly Survival eMag newsletter for survival and preparedness tips, new gear announcements, gear reviews, and subscriber-only giveaways and discounts. All right, I think that's about it. Thanks for joining us today. We'll see you next time on the Survival Show podcast. Until then, keep it simple, be positive, and stay sharp.